All right, well, good morning. Good to see everyone today.
And we're in a series on Sunday mornings titled Why. And we're simply asking some why questions. And today we're going to ask the question of why suffering? Why do the righteous suffer? Because that's the real problem, right? Why righteous people suffer. No one complains when evil people suffer. It's when righteous people, good people, suffer that it tears at our hearts. But we're not nearly concerned about evil people suffering as we are the righteous. And so, this is a question that many people in the Bible ask. You know, why? Why? Job wanted to know why and really never got complete answers to the question. Nonetheless, he trusted God. So why does God allow suffering? Why does He allow righteous people to suffer? And I'm going to give you a variety of reasons this morning. Number one, God allows us to suffer because there is value in suffering. There's benefit in suffering. And there are a lot of verses that teach this. For example, Psalm 119, verse 71, listen to David. It was good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. And so David said, it was good for me to be afflicted. It was good for me to be disciplined, because it was then that I learned to keep your statutes. And then over in James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3, as James talks about suffering that people endure, he says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. So notice, the testing of your faith through the trials brings about endurance. And so there's benefit that comes, value that comes through being disciplined by God. The Hebrew writer over in Hebrews chapter 12, I don't have this one on the screen, but if you want to look at it in Hebrews 12, I'm going to look at a few verses. The Hebrew writer speaks here of the discipline of God. He begins in verse 5. He says, and you've forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by Him. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens and scourges every son whom He receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom the Father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. God says, if you're not receiving discipline from me, you're not my child. I discipline my children, God says. And then in verse 10, he says, verse 9, furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more ratherly be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But He for our profit, there it is, benefit, profit, value. He says that we might be partakers of His holiness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who've been trained by it. God disciplines His children, and He does it for a specific reason, that they become holy and godly, and that's what God is seeking to do in the lives of His people. That was the reason for the captivities. That's the reason why God sent His people into Babylonian captivity, to correct their behavior so that they would come out of captivity and once again live righteously before God. The same with the Assyrian captivity. God was disciplining His people so that they would become righteous. We need hard times. We need God's discipline. We need suffering in our lives, because it's then that we are helped along in our faith in Jesus Christ. We grow and we become the people that God wants us to be. So one of the reasons why God allows suffering is there's benefit in suffering. There's value in suffering. But number two, the righteous suffer as a result of their sin or the sin of others. It's really, I just have a result of sin, but their own or others. All right? Suffering comes about as a result of that. Look at, we saw in Genesis chapter 3, it was read just a few moments ago, and we're going to come back to that shortly. But we see sin, and we see God removed His presence from them, the hardship. But anyway, look at verse Galatians 6, verse 7 here. He says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap." And so Paul says sin has a boomerang effect to it. When you sin, it has an effect. It comes back and it affects your life. There's no sin you commit that does not have consequence. And sometimes the consequence of sin is absolutely devastating in the lives of God's people. I'll turn your attention to Romans chapter 1. Real quick, Romans chapter 1. And Paul here is talking about God's wrath being poured out. I just want you to see this. Verse 18, Romans 1, Paul says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them." And then he goes on and he says in verse 24, "Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchanged the natural use for that which is against nature." In other words, lesbianism. God turns them over to their sin. You want to live that way? God says go and live that way. But there's consequences. Verse 26, "For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions." Verse 27, "Likewise, the men, leaving the natural use of the women, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due." Homosexuality here, men with men, he says in verse 28, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things that are not profitable." God says, you want to live that way? Go ahead. Go ahead and live that way. God allows you to if that's what you want to do. But boy, there are consequences. Verse 29, "Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness." He says, "full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." Those who practice those sins, Paul says, are worthy of death. Not talking about physical death. Talking about spiritual death. Eternal death is what he's talking about. But not only those who do those things, but those who approve of those things. So if you approve of a gay lifestyle, for example, you're as guilty as those who practice. That's what Paul is saying. Sin has a boomerang effect. Verse 18 makes it clear that God's wrath is being poured out, that's present tense, right now, upon the ungodly. What does that mean? It means there's consequences to sin. When you go out and drink, you could have a wreck and kill somebody. You could have a wreck and lose a limb, for example. You could take, some sort of drug, an OD, and die. I mean, terrible things. You can commit immorality and come up with AIDS or some, sexual disease of some kind. God has baked in consequence to every sin. There's no sin you can commit that doesn't have consequence. Sin has a boomerang effect. It's going to come back and it's going to smack you in the face. This is the way it is. Now, I'm going to come back to that Genesis 3 in the next two points from now. Because I think it's the best place to make that point. So number three, God allows suffering. Suffering occurs because of the fallibility and the frailty of human beings. In other words, we're frail, and other people are frail, and sometimes we do things that causes severe consequences in our lives. A teenager, for example, might misjudge how far he or she can swim in a lake and drown. I had a friend that did that. We used to go out to the gravel pits and swim. I've actually had two friends that drowned. And we would swim across that thing or back and forth. But one day, one of my buddies didn't make it and went under. And we were unable to find him. But that's what happens sometimes. You just misjudge what you're capable of. God didn't sink him. I mean, he knew how to swim, but he just misjudged. And as a result, that brought tremendous suffering in his family's life. An elderly man, might run a red light or a stop sign and crash into somebody and kill them or maim them in some way, causing suffering, but it's just due to the frailty of human beings. Sometimes we just do things and we don't intend to, or we misjudge our abilities. For example, plane crashes, due to pilot error, and dozens and dozens and dozens of people die. And there's so much suffering. But that suffering has come about as a result of the frailty of human beings. It's not God punishing anybody. It's just frail human beings who sometimes make poor choices, and as a result, it ends up in suffering. So it's just one of the reasons that people suffer. But there's another reason. Natural disasters. The innocent suffer because they come into conflict with the laws of nature. And if you come into the conflict with the laws of nature, you're going to get hurt. Electricity, for example. That is Appia. You do not want to get hit by a lightning bolt. That's why when there are thunderstorms, we're told to get indoors. It's not safe to be outside. You're up on a roof, painting or something, and you fall, right? Gravity is going to get you. It's going to take you down. It's absolutely going to take you down. And I'll state this again, but think about it. You think, well, why couldn't God just save me? Just suspend gravity for a minute. Well, think about that. If God suspended gravity just for a minute to save you from hitting the ground, guess what would happen to the rest of the world? we'd all be flung out in space at 1,000 miles an hour. At the equator, a little slower as you go to the poles. But we're just going to be just hurled off of this earth because gravity's the only thing that's keeping our feet on it. And so, the laws of nature will get you. And sometimes it results in suffering. Tornadoes, right? We've all known people who've experienced tornadoes, and we all know the destruction that tornadoes cause and the death that tornadoes cause. This the tremendous suffering that people go through as a result of such a storm as a tornado. You know, hurricanes, another situation. That's just a great big tornado, right? Only it's huge. You know, you're talking, you know, maybe 150 miles in diameter. I mean, it's a big storm. It's going to do tremendous damage if you're in the pathway of that. That's why you may not want to live in Florida or along the Gulf State somewhere, just because that's always a possibility. And you know that going in it. I mean, if you live in Tornado Alley, you're accepting that, hey, I know that can happen, and I know I can get hurt, and I know this can produce a lot of suffering, but I choose to live here anyway. Well, if you do that, just know you might get hurt one day. Same thing is true with hurricanes and earthquakes. Isn't it funny, since they stopped all that drilling here, we haven't had no earthquakes? I mean, we were having, what, 50 earthquakes a day for a while, it seemed like. Just every time you turn around, it was earthquake. No earthquakes now. Don't tell me that wasn't due to fracking. It was. We know that. But now, let me just say something here about these. And this is where I want to go back to Genesis chapter 3. I'm under the belief that our world is not the same as when God initially created it. That when man sinned, it not only affected man, but it affected the entire creation of God. And perhaps the reason we have tornadoes, the reason we have hurricanes, the reason we have earthquakes is due to the fact that something happened to the creation long ago. And it did. Man fell. Man fell. And it affected the universe. Look in Romans 8. In Romans chapter 8. Look at verses 20 to 22. Paul says, "For the creation was subjected to futility," he says, "not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." So Paul's speaking of a time when the creation is going to be liberated. When we're going to be liberated, when we're going to shed these physical bodies and we're going to put on our new, glorious, glorified bodies shaped in the image and likeness of Jesus Christ Himself, that's our hope. That's our future. But Paul also says that this is a time when the creation also will be released from the bondage of corruption that it finds itself in. Why is it there? The fall. The fall. And remember, when man fell, God cursed the ground. You remember that? There was a curse. And that's why we have all those weeds that we have to deal with. If you're a gardener, weeds is your nemesis, is your enemy. I hate those things, but that's part of the fall. That's a consequence of the fall. And so I really believe that a lot of things we experience in this universe now could very well be due. I don't know 100%, but I believe that these kinds of things is probably due to the fall of man when God cursed the earth and the whole creation was affected by it. But there's coming a day when it will be delivered just as you and I will be delivered. And that's what Paul says. And Peter says, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Not this one. It's going to be new. All right. So, real quick. Until we can know what God knows and do what God can do, we should not be so fast to criticize what God has done. Right? Because we might think, well, if I made the world, I would have done it better. Really? Really? You would have done a better job than God? No, I don't think so. We need to be very careful criticizing God and the way He created the world. You may not like suffering. You may not like hardship. But it's so good for us. And God knows what He's doing. So here's the thing. Why doesn't God intervene? Why doesn't He intervene? Why doesn't God keep the wicked from hurting the righteous? God does not intervene because He must respect that man is a free moral agent. And so, remember I said we experience suffering because of our sin and the sin of other people. And so I could make a choice to hurt you. I could make a choice to cause you to suffer. But I could also make a choice to love you. Right? And so I can do either or. God has given me that freedom. I can use that freedom to cause pain, or I can use that freedom to enjoy loving relationships with people. You see, God created us with the ability to make choices. And we're free moral agents. God does not interfere with that. God does not come down and change my decision. If I make a decision to hurt you, He's not going to change my mind. He's not going to change my mind. Because I'm a free moral agent, He's going to allow me to be a free moral agent. God allows this freedom because think of the consequence. You would be a robot or a puppet on a string. Is that what you would rather be? Imagine for just a moment. Your child comes up to you and says, I love you, Mommy. This is a recording. I mean, if God made us that way, created us that way, had no choice, you could never know love. You couldn't. It's when I choose to love you, regardless of what is in your life. I make that choice, that decision. And that's love. That's how we engage in loving relationships. But if you don't have that ability, you can't have loving relationships. So it's why God does not intervene. Secondly, God doesn't intervene when it comes to earthquakes or tornadoes or hurricanes. You see, God has created the universe with certain laws that govern it. And those laws are in place. If you violate those laws, you're going to get hurt. Gravity or whatever it might be. But gravity is a wonderful thing. But God can override it if you're falling from a building just to save you, because everybody else will be lost in the process. So you can't do it. You just can't do it. And this is where I thought, yeah. So while God doesn't intervene, right, when it comes to our choices or man's fallibility or the laws of nature, He has intervened. Has He not? He's come into the world in the person of Jesus Christ. He marched to a cross, died for humanity's sins, was buried and raised from the dead 3 days later. There's a way out of our sin. There's a way out of our sin. And I believe that God created this universe as a veil of soul winning. Thomas B. Warren wrote a book titled, Have Atheists Proved That There Is No God? And so, what he's talking about here, is that man needs challenges, because it's those challenges that drive us to God. It's those challenges that cause us to go to God and ask His help. Without those challenges, you wouldn't pursue God. If your life was wonderful and you had everything you wanted and you didn't need anything, you would not be passionately following after God. It's the struggles. It's the hard times. That's what drives us to Him. That's what brings us to Him. If we didn't have those challenges, we would be on the outside looking in. And so God created a world that's perfect for soul winning. Everybody's going to experience challenges. Everybody is going to feel compelled to come to God for help. And God is willing to help. I think it does make sense that God created this world for the sole purpose of soul winning. That's what God has in mind. All right. So if you're struggling, if life is hard for you, just know that there are many, many good, valid reasons why we human beings suffering. God is not wicked. God is not evil. God is not getting back at people. God only allows the suffering in our lives that will cause us to seek Him out and to seek His help. That's why He allows it. And so this morning, if you're struggling, and maybe you don't know why, and life is hard, what does struggling do? It's to compel us to come to God. If you need help this morning, come. Come. There's no better opportunity than for you to come right now and ask God's help and allow God's people to rally around you and to pray with you. If you need the forgiveness of sins that comes through Jesus Christ, we also hope that you will come. Come. Let us share with you the gospel. Whatever your need is, make it known as we sing.